Welcome to our deep dive into the history of Sheriff Hutton. Wow, just glancing through these sources you've provided, it's incredible.
It really is a fascinating place.
We've got historical records, architectural analysis, a bit of Shakespeare even. Sheriff Hutton's history is definitely not boring. Ancient Roman roads, powerful Norman families, a medieval arms race.
Oh, and of course, the Wars of the Roses.
Of course, can't forget that.
Yeah, and what's so interesting is that Sheriff Hutton is right in the thick of it.
Yeah.
You know, for centuries. It's not just grand historical events playing out on a distant stage, but these events really shaped the lives of the people who lived and worked in Sheriff Hutton.
Okay, well, let's unpack this. Starting at the very beginning, you've included some archaeological reports.
Yeah.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
What can they tell us about the earliest days of Sheriff Hutton?
Well, it's clear that people have been living in this area for a very long time. We're talking prehistoric flint tools found right where Sheriff Hutton stands today. And there are even hints of Roman settlements and roads, possibly linking Sheriff Hutton to the major Roman city of Eboracum, which we now know as York.
I was just looking at the map that you provided, and wow, it is amazing to think of Romans marching through what is now a peaceful Yorkshire village.
I know, it's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah. And speaking of names, you also included some information about the meaning of Sheriff Hutton itself.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Well, Hutton comes from Old English, meaning a farmstead on a projecting piece of land. Quite descriptive, really, but it's the sheriff part that links us to one of the most powerful families in the region. The Bulmers.
Okay.
They were the sheriffs of Yorkshire for generations.
So these Bulmers, they weren't just your average medieval family, right?
No, not at all.
You highlight in your notes a passage about their possible Viking ancestry and their name literally meaning famous bull.
Right.
Talk about making a statement. It's like something straight out of a Norse saga.
Absolutely. The Bulmers are a great example of how local history can be just as captivating as any epic tale. And you're right, they were likely descendants of Norse settlers, bringing with them that warrior tradition and hunger for land and power.
So how did the Bulmers, with their Viking heritage and their famous bull name, fit into the bigger picture of medieval England?
Well, to understand that, we need to talk about the feudal system.
Okay.
Imagine society as a pyramid with the king at the top.
Yeah.
And below him were these powerful lords who in turn granted land to lesser nobles, like the Bulmers, in exchange for loyalty and military service.
And Sheriff Hutton was a pretty sweet piece of real estate, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Strategically important, fertile land. I bet it attracted attention from other powerful families.
It certainly did. The Domesday Book, you know that incredible survey of England commissioned by William the Conqueror in 1086? Well, it gives us a snapshot of Sheriff Hutton at that time.
Mm-hmm.
It lists the Bulmers as the main landholders, but it also mentions other powerful families with interests in the area, like the Mollies and the Fossards.
So even back then, it was all about who had the most land, the most influence, the most power.
Pretty much, yeah.
You've also included a fascinating architectural analysis of the Norman church that still stands in Sheriff Hutton.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible to think that this building has stood witness to so much history. What stood out to you from that analysis?
What's really intriguing is that the church may have incorporated Roman stones into its structure. You can actually see different architectural periods layered on top of each other, a real physical reminder of the long sweep of history.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got ancient settlements, power struggles, a Norman church built on Roman foundations. It's an amazing story already. But then you added a note that said, enter the Nevilles. Things get really interesting here.
Oh, yes.
So who were these Nevilles and what's their connection to Sheriff Hutton?
Well, the Nevilles were one of the most powerful families in medieval England. And they enter the story of Sheriff Hutton through a strategic marriage, Emma de Bulmer to Geoffrey de Neville.
Okay.
And this union brought the Nevilles right into the heart of Yorkshire. And for the next three centuries, Sheriff Hutton becomes entwined with their rise to prominence.
And their rise was, let's just say, dramatic. You've got all these notes about shifting alliances, power struggles within the family itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving me some major Game of Thrones vibes.
Yeah, that's a very apt comparison. This was a time when royal authority was weakening. Kings like Richard II faced challenges from ambitious dukes and the Nevilles. They were masters at exploiting these power vacuums.
So they saw an opportunity and they grabbed it with both hands.
Exactly.
You've also highlighted John Neville.
Yes.
One of these ambitious Nevilles. He secured a license to crenellate.
Right.
You've even underlined that part. What was so important about this license?
The license to crenellate. This wasn't just about adding battlements to an existing structure. It was a royal seal of approval, a recognition of the Nevilles' growing power and influence. And it paved the way for the construction of Sheriff Hutton Castle, a massive statement of their dominance in the region.
So they were literally building their power stone by stone.
Exact, yeah.
But it wasn't all about grand castles and power struggles.
Right.
You've also included a source that gives us a glimpse into everyday life in Sheriff Hutton. The will of Richard Farndale.
Yes. Richard Farndale's will is a fascinating document. It's not a tale of kings and conquests, but it's a window into the life of an ordinary man in 14th century Sheriff Hutton.
Okay.
He details his possessions, his family relationships, even his concerns for his soul after death.
You know, I love these little details that bring history to life. I read that he even left money to repair the church roof. It makes you realize that even in the shadow of these grand historical events, people were still worried about the everyday things like leaky roofs and the welfare of their livestock.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And his will was written during a time of immense change. England was in the grip of an arms race with nobles vying for power. And this local will reminds us that everyday people were caught up in these larger forces.
It's easy to forget that history isn't just about dates and battles.
Right.
It's about real people living their lives, making their wills, trying to make sense of the world around them.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of trying to make sense of a chaotic world, this brings us to one of the most tumultuous periods in English history, the Wars of the Roses.
Indeed. A brutal conflict over the English throne. And as you can imagine, the Nevilles, with their vast lands and influence, they were right in the middle of it all.
Right. And I remember from your notes, it wasn't just a simple case of picking a side and sticking to it. The Nevilles were famous for their, let's say, flexible loyalties. Switching sides in the Wars of the Roses was like as casual as changing your Facebook status.
Huh. It does seem that way, doesn't it? But their shifting allegiances, they were more than just flip-flopping. They were very carefully calculated moves to protect their interests and expand their power base.
So they were playing the long game, using the chaos of the wars to their advantage.
Exactly. And to understand their strategy, we really need to unravel this, their complex family tree. Because this is where things get really interesting. You marked a passage in one of your sources. It talked about Richard Neville, the Earl of Salisbury. He's often called the Elder. Just to distinguish him from his even more famous son, Richard Neville, the Kingmaker.
Yes, the father is the Kingmaker.
Right.
It's all coming back to me now. He inherited key Neville lands, including Sheriff Hutton. And then there's that whole Neville-Percy feud.
Right, right. And that feud is just a perfect example of how those local rivalries were so intertwined with this larger conflict.
Yeah.
You know, the Nevilles and the Percys, they were both powerful families in the north of England, constantly vying for control and influence. You know, like a high-stakes game of chess, but with real armies and real consequences.
Wow. And this Richard Neville the Elder, he wasn't just sitting back and watching this unfold.
Oh, not at all. He was a very skilled politician and military leader.
Mm-hmm.
And his son, the Kingmaker, he learned from the best.
Yeah.
Together, they really maneuvered the Nevilles into a position of immense power, even influencing who sat on the English throne.
Okay, that is some serious power brokering. But amidst all of this high-stakes drama, I noticed a note you made in the margin about a what-if moment in history.
Okay.
It involves Richard of Gloucester, the future Richard III. You seem particularly interested in his connection to the Nevilles and Sheriff Hutton. What's the story there?
Well, Richard of Gloucester's early life is really fascinating. He spent his formative years at Middleham Castle under the tutelage of the Kingmaker himself.
That's right. Middleham wasn't too far from Sheriff Hutton,
yeah.
And the Kingmaker was married to Richard of Gloucester's sister, Anne Neville. It was a real family affair.
Exactly, yeah. And this raises a really intriguing question. Had the Kingmaker not rebelled against Edward IV, would Richard of Gloucester have remained loyal? Would history have unfolded differently? It's a tantalizing thought.
A real sliding doors moment.
Yeah.
But as it happened, the Kingmaker did rebel, and Richard of Gloucester's path took a very different turn.
Indeed. After the Kingmaker's death, Richard of Gloucester gained control of Sheriff Hutton, and his marriage to Anne Neville really solidified his claim to the Neville lands.
Okay.
He also became the king's lieutenant in the north, a position of immense power and responsibility.
It's interesting to think about how, even back then, regional power was crucial. You know, it's like in modern politics, you need a strong base of support outside of the capital to really make an impact.
You're right. And Richard III understood this very well. From his base in the north, at places like Sheriff Hutton and Middleham, he established his Council of the North, this powerful administrative body designed to govern the region effectively.
So we're seeing Sheriff Hutton evolve from a symbol of local power, you know, to a center of regional administration. And this is all happening during one of the most turbulent periods in English history.
It really highlights how Sheriff Hutton wasn't just a backdrop for these events. It was really a key player shaping and being shaped by those forces that were reshaping England.
But Richard III's reign was, you know, short-lived, ending dramatically at the Battle of Bosworth. I can't even imagine what the people of Sheriff Hutton must have thought when news arrived of his defeat and death.
Yeah.
A new king, a new dynasty. Everything must have felt so uncertain.
Absolutely. The transition from Richard III to Henry VII, the first Tudor king, was a real pivotal moment for England and for Sheriff Hutton.
Okay, rewind for a second.
Mm-hmm.
I'm familiar with Henry VIII and his six wives, but remind me what happened with Henry VII. How did he come to power?
Well, after Richard III's death, Henry Tudor, he was a descendant of the Lancastrian line, he claimed the throne as Henry VII.
Right.
He defeated Richard at Bosworth, ending the Wars of the Roses and ushering in the Tudor dynasty.
Right. And I bet Henry VIII wasn't about to let a place like Sheriff Hutton, with its strategic importance and its ties to the defeated Yorkist dynasty, just slip through his fingers.
You're exactly right. The fate of Sheriff Hutton became very entangled with the Tudor dynasty's efforts to consolidate their power and legitimize their rule. And this is where we see the story kind of shift from battlefield dramas to like a high stakes game of royal real estate.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What happens to Sheriff Hutton under Henry VII? Does it become a Tudor stronghold?
Well, initially, there was some confusion about its ownership. Some still saw it as belonging to the Neville heirs. But ultimately, Henry VIII declares it as part of the inheritance of Richard, Duke of York, Richard III's father.
So he's linking his claim back to the Yorkist lineage. Clever move. It's like he's trying to say, hey, I'm not just some usurper. I'm part of the established order.
Exactly. He's weaving this narrative of continuity, you know, trying to appease both Yorkist and Lancastrian supporters and really solidify his own grip on the throne.
But he doesn't hold on to Sheriff Hutton, right?
Yeah.
I remember you mentioning a rather special recipient of Henry VIII's generosity.
You're thinking of Henry VIII and his illegitimate son, Henry Fitzroy.
Yes.
Well, to solidify his son's position and maybe appease his conscience a little bit, Henry VIII granted him the title Duke of Richmond and Somerset, along with, you guessed it, Sheriff Hutton Castle and its lands.
Wow. Talk about a lavish gift. A ducal seat fit for a king's son.
Yeah.
So Sheriff Hutton was like, once again thrust into the spotlight, a symbol of royal favor and ambition.
It really was. But sadly, Henry Fitzroy died young, and Sheriff Hutton, along with his other titles, reverted back to the crown.
Those royal gifts always come with strings attached.
Yeah.
So what became of Sheriff Hutton then? Did Henry VIII decide to keep it for himself?
Not exactly. The Tudor court was, you know, a whirlwind of expenses and intrigue, and
yeah.
Henry VIII had his hands full.
Yeah.
For a time, the revenues from Sheriff Hutton were actually used to fund the garrison at Berwick, a very crucial border defense against those pesky Scots.
So Sheriff Hutton was caught up in the Tudor dynasty's political and financial machinations.
Right.
It makes you wonder what the locals must have thought about all these changes in ownership and purpose.
You're right. And it's a good reminder that those grand historical narratives, they're always playing out against the backdrop of everyday life.
Mm-hmm. But it wasn't just about money, right?
Yeah.
You also mentioned something about the Council of the North and its continued use of Sheriff Hutton.
Yes. Despite the castle's gradual decline, it did remain a meeting place for the Council of the North, along with nearby Pontefract Castle.
Right.
And this is significant because it shows that enduring legacy of Richard III's administrative reforms, even under Tudor rule.
So even though the castle itself was kind of like losing its grandeur, its administrative importance continued. It was still a place where decisions were made, power was exercised.
Yeah.
The region was governed.
Precisely. And this brings us closer to the fascinating story of Sir Arthur Ingram.
Okay.
By the early 1600s, under the reign of James I, the crown was starting to sell off some of its properties. This was partly to raise funds and partly to reward loyal supporters. And Sir Arthur Ingram, with his sharp mind and an eye for opportunity, was perfectly positioned to take advantage of this changing landscape.
Okay, this is where I need all the details. You've called him a financial genius, a ruthless swindler.
Right.
This guy sounds like he could be the main character in his own Netflix series. What was so remarkable about him? And how did he manage to get his hands on Sheriff Hutton? You know, I marked this section in one of the sources, Juicy Gossip. It talks about how Sir Arthur Ingram made his fortune.
Ooh.
Apparently, he was a master of, like, exploiting loopholes, manipulating markets, bending the rules to his advantage.
Mm-hmm.
Some even called him a tyrant, a robber.
It seems his reputation was a bit complicated, but that's often the case, isn't it, with those who amass great wealth and power. There are always winners and losers in the game of finance, and Sir Arthur Ingram, well, he definitely knew how to play to win.
So we've got this shrewd, ambitious, and perhaps slightly ruthless character entering the scene.
Yeah.
What was it about Sheriff Hutton that caught his eye?
Well, remember that Sheriff Hutton Park was part of the Royal Forest of Galtres.
Right.
We're talking prime real estate here.
Mm-hmm.
Vast woodlands, fertile land, perfect for hunting and displaying your wealth.
Okay.
And Sir Arthur Ingram managed to secure a grant for the park from the crown.
Of course he did. This guy was like a real estate mogul of the 17th century.
Pretty much, yeah.
But he didn't just settle for owning the land, did he? You mentioned something about a grand new lodge.
You're right. He built a magnificent new lodge within the park, showcasing his wealth and status. You know, imagine lavish feasts, hunting parties, all the trappings of a wealthy gentleman's life.
It sounds like he was creating his own little kingdom within the former royal lands.
It's a great analogy. He was really part of that new generation of landowners who were rising to prominence through their financial savvy rather than their inherited titles. You know, they were really reshaping the social landscape of England.
But this Sir Arthur Ingram, he died eventually, right?
Of course, yeah.
What happens to Sheriff Hutton Park after he's gone? Is it game over for the Ingrams?
Not quite. Sir Arthur had several sons, and like many families of their time, inheritance played a crucial role in shaping their destinies.
Yeah.
Sheriff Hutton Park became part of their legacy, but their story takes a dramatic turn against the backdrop of one of the most tumultuous periods in English history. The English Civil War.
Oh, wow. The English Civil War. That's the one with the roundheads and the cavaliers, right?
That's the one.
King Charles I losing his head and all that. I have to admit, my knowledge of this period is a little bit rusty.
Oh, it was a brutal conflict that really divided England, you know, pitting those who supported the monarchy against those who favored Parliament. And guess what? Sheriff Hutton gets caught right in the crossfire.
Of course it does. I should know better than to think Sheriff Hutton could stay out of the drama. So which side did the Ingrams choose? Were they royalists siding with the king, or were they parliamentarians?
Well, it's fascinating because Sir Arthur Ingram himself, you know, the one who acquired Sheriff Hutton Park, he was a master of staying neutral.
Uh-huh.
He managed to avoid taking a firm stance throughout those early years of the conflict, perhaps hoping to protect his wealth and influence no matter who came out on top.
Sounds like a pretty smart strategy, at least from a self-preservation standpoint. But I'm guessing his sons weren't quite as politically agile?
You're right. They couldn't escape the pull of loyalty and conviction. Sir Arthur's eldest son, also named Sir Arthur, sided with Parliament.
Yeah.
But his third son, Sir Thomas, oh, he was a staunch royalist, a true believer in the divine right of kings. And guess what? Sir Thomas ended up inheriting Sheriff Hutton.
Wow. Talk about a divided family. I bet those family gatherings were tense, to say the least.
Oh, you can imagine the dinner table conversations.
Yeah.
But their divided loyalties, they really reflect the broader turmoil of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Brother against brother, families torn apart by deeply held beliefs.
So here we have Sir Thomas, the royalist son, inheriting Sheriff Hutton right in the middle of the English Civil War. Does he turn it into a cavalier stronghold? Does he raise an army for the king?
He tries to, but by this point, Sheriff Hutton Castle was really a shadow of its former glory. You know, centuries of use, neglect, and perhaps even some strategic dismantling by previous owners had really taken their toll.
Okay.
So Sir Thomas decides to focus on more practical matters.
Okay. Let me guess. He renovates the castle, adds some fancy new fortifications to make it a true royalist stronghold.
Not quite. In a move that might shock history buffs, he actually dismantles parts of the castle, using the stone to build stables and a brew house at the Ranger's house.
He tore down parts of the castle to build stables. I mean, I know the castle was in bad shape, but that still seems a bit extreme, even for a devoted royalist.
It does seem counterintuitive, but remember, this was a time of war, and practical needs often outweighed, hysterical sentimentality. He needed functional buildings, and the castle provided a readily available source of materials.
So, the once mighty Sheriff Hutton Castle, home to powerful families, a king's lieutenant, a duke's son, reduced to a quarry. It's a stark reminder that even the grandest structures are vulnerable to the tides of time and the changing priorities of those in power.
It is a poignant reminder of how history can be both grand and incredibly pragmatic. And sadly, for Sheriff Hutton Castle, this marked the beginning of its final decline. It never really recovered its former glory.
But the story of Sheriff Hutton doesn't end there, right? The estate itself, the parkland, the village, they live on, carrying the echoes of all those who came before.
Absolutely. The Ingram family, through various marriages and inheritances, they held on to Sheriff Hutton Park until the early 1900s. And throughout that time, the estate continued to reflect the changing social and economic landscape of England, from agricultural estates to country retreats for the wealthy.
So from ancient settlements to Roman roads, Viking ancestors, Norman conquerors, power struggles, a license to crenellate, a king's lieutenant, a duke's son, a financial mastermind, a divided family during the English Civil War. Sheriff Hutton has seen it all. It's like a microcosm of English history preserved in its very stones and soil.
It is. It's a truly remarkable story. And what's fascinating is how local history can illuminate those broader forces that are shaping a nation. We see the rise and fall of dynasties, the evolution of the feudal system, the impact of war and rebellion, and the changing fortunes of those who held power all in this one place.
It's incredible how a seemingly ordinary village in Yorkshire can hold such extraordinary stories. And, as we've been talking, I keep thinking back to that will of Richard Farndale, that ordinary man living his life in the shadow of these great events. It's a reminder that history isn't just about kings and queens and battles. It's about the everyday lives of people like you and me.
That's a great point. And it makes you wonder what stories are hidden within our own families, our own communities, what traces of the past have shaped the present.
So what does this all mean for you, listening to this deep dive? Why should you care about the history of Sheriff Hutton?
Because it shows us that history is alive, it's relevant, and it's full of surprises. It's a story that continues to unfold, and you're a part of it. Sheriff Hutton reminds us that even the most unassuming places can hold extraordinary tales just waiting to be uncovered. And the sources you've provided are a real treasure trove of information just waiting to be explored further.
So I encourage you to dig deeper. Unravel the stories of the Bulmers, the Nevilles, the Ingrahams. Explore the architectural details of the church and the castle ruins. Imagine what life was like for Richard Farndale as he penned his will, or for a young Richard of Gloucester training for knighthood at nearby Middleham Castle. And here's a final thought to ponder. Knowing what we now know about Richard III, both from historical records and from Shakespeare's infamous portrayal, was he truly a villain? Or is there more to his story? Was he a victim of Tudor propaganda, or did he orchestrate his own rise to power no matter the cost? The debate continues, and Sheriff Hutton, with its connections to Richard III's life and reign, offers a unique perspective on this enduring historical mystery. Let Sheriff Hutton spark your own historical imagination.